So good morning again. Thank you all for the privilege of being here this morning. It's been a very warm welcome for sure in such a big building like this that is very welcome to have such warmth greeted toward me. So I thank you for that, and I thank you for the opportunity to be with you here today. The only challenge I think I have is that I'm trying to keep this to 15 minutes, and I have a gift to gab. So, and I don't have my watch on, I don't have my phone. So those aren't good things. Let's hope I can do that for you. So the title of my message today is called The Secret of the Uninhibited Life. Now I know we're not supposed to make assumptions, but I'm going to assume that most of us, I would think all of us here, want to live life unencumbered, uninhibited. If you had a choice between being free or being imprisoned, I'm guessing we'd all want to be free. So that's why I think that knowing the secret to an uninhibited life is good for all of us. So I come from Nova Scotia originally. I went to school in New Brunswick. And in New Brunswick, and when I was in my undergrad, I was doing some training at maximum security prison, doing some chaplaincy. And I remember meeting a man we'll call Gus. He had been there for at least 10 years, probably more, and served his time, and his release date was coming up. And when it came, he was so excited. Everyone was excited. All of us were. And we had a party for him and gave him hugs and said goodbyes and good luck. And there was one of his co-prison mates who was beside me at the party, and he says, "Oh, he'll be back, don't you worry. Before you know it, he's going to be right back here." And at the time, I thought, what a horrible thing to say. You know, like, why would anyone who has lived so much of their life confined and then finally get their freedom for the last half of their life want to give that up and end up back here again? So I thought that was a crazy thought. So I continued my weekly visits, and after about a month, guess who showed up back in the prison? Gus. So it didn't take long for Gus to realize that he didn't know how to live and didn't know how to function outside of the restraints and the confines that he had known for so long, such a large part of his life. So when he was given freedom, he didn't know how to do it. He didn't know how to manage that. He had grown accustomed to being inside. And as dysfunctional as that sounds, he actually preferred being restrained rather than uninhibited. So I guess there are those people. And I was thinking about how many of us maybe can relate to Gus. Probably most of us here can relate to that mentality. You might think, no, I wouldn't want to be constrained like that. But we're surrounded by constraints. We were raised with them from birth. From when we're a baby, we have a crib. So there's the beginning. But there's constraints and restraints around us, financial constraints, physical, social constraints, legal restraints. Believe me, I wish they weren't there sometimes. Sometimes I'd like to go through those yellow traffic lights and all those wonderful things. But there's reasons for some of those constraints, for safety. There's religious constraints. Often, as you know and probably read, I am a spiritual care practitioner currently, and I work at Scarborough Health Network, mostly at the Birchmount site, but I go to all three. And sometimes when I'll go in to visit a patient, I'll introduce myself and say, "I'm Pam, I'm from spiritual care." And I bet you can guess what some people, their first response is, "Oh, I'm not religious. And so I immediately respond with, "Good, because neither am I. So now we can have a conversation." And that kind of surprises them at first, but then it also helps them to let down their guard a little bit, because they realize they can be open with me. They don't have to have a certain criteria that to match, or that they're going to be judged, or they're going to be reprimanded. There's a sense of freedom in knowing that I'm just there to talk with them. That's it. I'm not here with an agenda. Don't have a big Bible that I'm going to, you know, put over their head. And so there's a freedom in that. And I feel like if we could find that freedom in our own lives, I feel the constraints that I'm talking about today are a little more ones that we've put on ourselves from childhood on up. So when we're a kid, you know how kids dance and they do all these wonderful, crazy things, and we have YouTube today to show it and to post it. And there's some sweet things that kids do, and we probably did them as well. But as we grow, we'll get a little bit older, people maybe will make fun of us or say, "Oh my goodness, did you see what she was doing or what she was wearing?" Those kinds of things happen. And before long, you have enough people saying no, that's impossible, you can't do that. No, you're not smart enough for that and various comments will be said to you throughout your life. And eventually we start constructing our own prison. We start constructing our own restrictions on our life for what's socially acceptable or what's, you know, going to make us least noticed, those kinds of constraints. We put them on ourselves to protect ourselves. And we have, I think there's good intentions in that. The problem is that we forget how to live life. Kind of like John Joseph was saying with the children there, with being wild and free. That's something we, especially as we get older, a lot of us have a hard time with that, knowing how to be free. And in the gospel reading today, I believe we have a few, we have a great example, I believe, of someone who can inspire us, I hope, to know how to live uninhibited. But there's a few characters, and we'll start with the main one, who is Jesus. And Jesus was the main character in that story. It was his party. They were celebrating him, honoring him. Lazarus had just been raised from the dead, so I know Lazarus was happy to be there and to celebrate Jesus. He was probably just happy to be breathing. And then we have Martha. She's in the story, and she's doing what she knows best to show her honor, and that is by serving. And then we have Mary, who was the one that stood out for me, of course, and that is because she didn't care who was around or what they were going to think of her. She had tunnel vision almost. She knew what she believed. She knew what she wanted to do. It didn't matter what people might say about her. When you're in public, you know that people are going to have their opinions of you. And in that room, I know Mary knew she was going to have people in there that had opinions of her, including Judas, who was very self-righteous and very ready to do exactly that. And he's the other character in the story, one who was constrained by finances, I would say, and by his own self-righteousness, maybe. Those were a couple of his constraints that he had. And he was very quick to say, what is she doing? Wasting, being so wasteful. That money could have gone to the poor. Meanwhile, even Jesus knows he didn't care anything about the poor. He just cared about the money. That was his main concern, and about his own self-righteousness. So Mary didn't allow those thoughts to bother her. I don't even know if they crossed her mind. I wonder, when she was picking up that perfume, if she was thinking, oh, this is very expensive. Maybe I shouldn't use it. Maybe I should, you know, find out if it's okay if I use it from my sister. Or maybe she could have thought, oh, if I use this oil and then wash it with my hair, I'm never going to get this out of my hair the next few days. But I doubt that any of those thoughts went through her mind, because she knew what she wanted to do, and she was free in herself, believed in herself, and believed in the one who was in front of her. And because of that faith that she had in him, and in that faith she could feel safety, safety that she wasn't going to be rejected, safety that she was not going to be ridiculed or put down by Jesus, because that's all that mattered to her. She didn't care what everyone else thought. She just cared about what he thought. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking how hard it is for us to have faith today, the kind of faith that Mary had. And I thought I would give you a little test today and see how much faith you have. So if I told you that I had something in my hand that I haven't touched and I haven't seen it, and neither has anyone else. No one else has ever touched it, no one else has ever seen it, but I'm holding it here in my hand. How many of you would believe me? Anyone? Okay, got one person. Oh, a few, good. It's nice to know a few of you have faith. Now, I wonder why they have faith in me. Do I just have a trustworthy looking face? Yeah? I'm in church, so I better not lie. That's what they're thinking, maybe. And those of you who don't believe me, what's going on in your mind? It's impossible, right? How could I possibly have something in my hand that no one's ever touched and no one's ever seen, that I haven't touched and I haven't seen? How is that even possible? It's not logical. It's crazy. And so then it's very hard for us to hold on to a faith when we can't touch it and can't see it. Hebrews 11 defines faith as being sure of what you hope for and certain of what you cannot see. That's what Mary had. Mary had that kind of faith in herself, that what she believed it wholeheartedly. And who was in front of her, she believed who he said he was. And so because of that faith, she was unrestricted, uninhibited, able to do what she did, not worrying about what was going on around her. I know what you're thinking. Okay, so now tell us, should we have had faith in you or not, right? So of course I would not lie to you. I do have something in my hand. It's a peanut. I have not seen the peanut. I still don't see it. Neither do you. I haven't touched the peanut. I'm touching the shell, but I'm not touching the peanut. You're thinking I'm tricking. It's not a trick. It's the truth, though, right? I haven't seen the peanut, and I haven't touched it. And yet, something that seemed impossible is possible. And the reason I like that illustration is because it reminds us that sometimes when life seems impossible, seems illogical, doesn't make sense, that doesn't mean that we have to restrict ourselves. We don't have to hold ourselves back. Augustine said it well when he said, "Understanding is a reward of faith. Therefore, seek not to understand that you may believe, but believe that you may understand." I think the disciples, Judas included, there's some that denied Jesus, some that betrayed him, some that abandoned him. So they were struggling with their faith at that point. They were trying to understand the teachings of Jesus. They were trying to understand what he was telling them, trying to understand the technicalities of it. But they were missing the most important ingredient, to just believe. And Peter comes to Jesus and he says to Jesus in Mark 8, he says, "Jesus, this is what all the people are saying about you. This is what they think about you. This is who they say you are." Jesus doesn't even listen to that. He says, "But Peter, what do you believe? Who do you say I am?" Because that's what matters. What matters is, what do you believe? You're always going to have doubters or haters, as they say. You're always going to have those people who are going to want to critique you and bring you down. But ultimately, you know yourself better than they do. And God knows you better than they do. And when we have faith in ourselves and in the God we serve, I believe it will give us that empowerment to go out and do things with our faith. And not just talk about faith, but actually put our faith into practice. And that's not always easy. There's a story that I heard about a man in Paris who was a tightrope walker. And this was years ago, way before video cameras and social media. And so an American promoter heard about this tightrope walker who was doing amazing feats all over Paris. He would go across the rope, first not blindfolded. Then he would go to make it even more riskier and put a blindfold on. Then he would go the third time with a wheelbarrow and blindfold it. And the promoter said, "I don't believe that. That's impossible. Just because I'm reading about it in the newspaper or hearing about it from people, I don't believe it's true." So he called, or not called, because he sent a letter to the tightrope walker, asking him to come to America and to go walk across the Niagara Falls from the Canadian side to the American side. And he was challenging him to do it in the same way that he did in Paris. So the tightrope walker was excited because he was getting a free trip and going to be paid to do this. So he accepted and he came. And there was a huge crowd and they were cheering him on. He walked across the rope the first time without a blindfold. Then he went with the blindfold. Came back the third time, blindfolded with the wheelbarrow, just like he said he would and could. And the third time when he came across, he went right over to the promoter and he looked him in the face and he said, "Now do you believe me? Now that you've seen, do you believe that I can do what I say I can do?" And the promoter said, "Of course, I've just watched you do it. So you have faith in me." He said, "I do." He said, "All right, get in the wheelbarrow." It's a little bit more difficult, isn't it? That's the real challenge to what we say, putting it into practice. And sometimes, you know, I ask myself, because this is, you know, whenever I talk of a message or say a message, it's for myself as well. How can I help myself to get rid of my own restrictions that I put on myself that doesn't allow me to walk in faith? What will help me to be unencumbered? You know, I've heard people say, drink. If you drink, you'll be unencumbered because it gets rid of all your walls and you'll be free-spirited, no hindrances. That's why I drink. And it reminded me of that passage in Ephesians 5:18 that says, "Don't get drunk on wine that leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit." And I thought, you know, probably the reason he said that or used that passage is because the same effects will happen when you're filled with the Spirit as when you're drinking. You will lose your inhibitions. When you are filled with the Spirit, I believe you're filled with faith. It's the same thing. When you're filled with faith, you have no fear. So you're not afraid to dance because you feel like dancing. You're not afraid to speak to that person because that's what you feel like doing. You're not afraid of what the consequences will be or how people will talk about you or think about you. And I think about this time of year. It's Lent. Lent, and we humble ourselves during Lent. We honor the cross on Good Friday. We celebrate the resurrection on Easter Sunday. But then I ask, what does all of that mean to me? What does that mean to me? We do this every year in honor of Christ. But what does it mean to me? How does my faith change me? Am I willing to get into the wheelbarrow? Or am I just, you know, easy to talk about and I know it up here, but am I able to live that out? And what will that look like? What does it look like to have that kind of faith? For example, let's say that you pray. Are you one of those people that when you pray, maybe you have cancer or someone you know has cancer, and you're praying for God to heal you of that cancer, but at the same time you're thinking about all the people you know that had the same cancer you have and they've died, or they went through horrendous suffering? Are you thinking about that job you'd like to have and you pray for God to make it happen? Meanwhile, you're thinking about all the reasons why you're not the best candidate. You know, when I was younger, I went on a missions trip to South Africa. I might have been 20, maybe. And we were in this big village. We're in a quite a large room. I had my professor from university was there. I had other students with me and other nationals and people that were in the room. And in comes this group of people carrying a small boy, very sick, on a mat, and they were carrying him in, and they brought him right in front of me. You can imagine, the room has a lot of people in it, why me? And so, of course, I was a little bit intimidated and scared. I thought, and so I asked the national, what do they want? What do they want me to do? And the national said, they want you to pray to heal this boy, because he's going to die, and they need someone with faith to lead them in prayer. And of course, I thought, well, why are they asking me? I can't be the one with the most faith in this room. There's so many older people, more mature, that are professors in here. Why me? And I remember I couldn't say no because they would be offended. So I was challenged with my own faith. So I prayed first to myself, saying, God, please help me in my unbelief. Help me to believe the same way these people believe. Help me to be able to pray. And so I did. The reason I'm telling you that is I don't know the outcome of this boy, but what I do know is that it challenged me to question my own faith. What do I say about my faith? What do I believe about myself and my abilities? Who am I and why am I here? What am I doing? And all those things that were challenged that day, and to this day forward, I challenge myself to say, if I say something, then I better believe it. If I believe it, then I better be putting it into action. Muhammad Ali once said, when a person says, I cannot, they have made a suggestion to themselves. They've weakened their power of accomplishing that which otherwise would have been accomplished. I'm going to read it once more because it's really good. He said, when a person says, I cannot, they have made a suggestion to themselves. They've weakened their power of accomplishing that which otherwise would have been accomplished. When we have faith, we are empowered. And when we allow ourselves to step out in that faith, we're even more empowered because we're putting it into action, we're putting it into practice. So what do we need to do to help ourselves to step out of these restrictions instead of living in the same prison that Gus was living in? What is it that we need to do to be able to experience freedom, to experience life uninhibited? What do we need to do? Do we need to force ourselves to go out there for a little while and try it out? See how it works. I could have allowed my insecurities, my doubts, my fears to prohibit me from even being here today. I'm just trying to give you some basic everyday life examples. So here's a massive church. I'm not even from the United Church. I don't know all the technicalities of what you do. I could totally make a big fool of myself here today. So when Joe, social worker from Scarborough Hospital, asked me to do this today, he's one of your members, I could have very easily said, oh no. No, that's okay, I'm too busy, can't do that. Or I could say, okay, I'll do it, I'll figure the rest out later. What I'm saying by that is, the only way to take these steps of faith is to say yes, instead of saying no to life and allowing yourselves to be blocked and held back, just say yes and then see what happens after that. Faith is believing in yourself, believing in who you are and who you were created to be, and believing that no matter what you do, where you go, you're not alone. God is with you in the wheelbarrow. God is with you in the storms of life, in your fears, in your insecurities, asking you to just trust. So, back to the original question, what is the secret to the uninhibited life? demonstrated so well by Mary in this story in the gospel. What is it? Someone tell me. What's the secret to an uninhibited life? I think I heard somebody say, faith, right? I think I heard you say that. Just want to make sure at least all my jibber jabber came out with something that we can come, that we can take from this passage, that if we want to be free, we want to enjoy life, if we want to live uninhibited, we need to have faith, but we have to have true faith, real faith, faith that allows us to be empowered. So may you find the courage to believe and enough faith to get into the wheelbarrow, trusting that no matter what happens, you are safe. You can be vulnerable. You can let yourself go because you are safe. Free yourself from your own restraints, your own inhibitions that you've created, and enjoy life the way God intended, uninhibited. Thank you, and God bless.